Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. November 19, 2020. Two ways to make decisions. Question: if a society or even a small group wants to find a solution, they will never go wrong by uniting for a higher goal. Will the common solution be more correct than the individual solutions of each person? Answer: naturally. But do not confuse two paths, coming to a common decision through many egos put together, and arriving at a common decision through rising above oneself, in faith above reason. It is characteristic of the wisdom of crowd that under certain conditions they find something in common out of all the opinions, which turns out to be closer to the truth. But in order to unite a large number of people, everyone must annul their egoism for the sake of a higher goal. From CapTV's Communication Skills, September 25, 2020. Medium published my new article, "The Tie Between Work and Pay is Crumbling." Among various economists, there is a growing conviction that we are nearing the end of capitalism. Personally, I think it's too soon to proclaim the end of capitalism, but what we are seeing is a growing disconnect between work and pay. That raises important questions that we will have to answer in the near future. Our meaning in life will not be found in work, but in meaningful and enriching connections with others. Only when we grow through our interactions with others, and when we help others grow through their interactions with us, do we feel satisfied that we have contributed something meaningful and lasting? First, people have to eat whether or not they work. They have to live somewhere, too, buy clothes, and in a modern country, they have to get medical insurance and education. While it's true that even today not everyone has these basic needs, it is also true that this state doesn't reflect a healthy society. Hence the growing prevalence of depression and the soaring numbers of premature deaths due to substance abuse, homicide, and suicide. So the first question is how to make sure that everyone gets the basic things that every person needs. Second, if people don't work, what will they do all day? If COVID-19 has taught us anything, it is that sitting idle at home is a bad idea. Over time, it makes people agitated, aggressive, depressed, if they weren't already, and, worst of all, hopeless, since they don't see an end in sight. In other words, people need a sense of purpose, a reason to get out of bed. If it isn't work and the need to earn a living, what can it be? First, people must be informed. They have to know that although they have money in the bank, if they do, it doesn't mean that they are independent from others. The production and supply chains that provide us with the products we buy at supermarkets and gadget stores entail millions of people. If you break just one link, the whole chain might stop working. This chain affects not only what we can buy, but also our jobs, our possibility to provide for ourselves and our families, national and international politics, and in the end, it can even determine life or death for many people. This is the true meaning of globalization. We have come to depend on each other even for our very lives. Once people comprehend our interdependence, it is easier to explain that if this is the case, it makes sense that better connections enable better lives. It also makes sense that the current system, which endorses individualism and self-absorption, is the opposite of what we need today, and is in fact the main reason that our society is in such a sorry state. At the moment, we are indoctrinated to value ourselves by two things: what we do, our job, title at work, etc., and how much money we make. In the absence of connection between work and income, these gauges for self-esteem will become irrelevant and we will have to find new ways to appreciate ourselves, or we will all feel worthless. In fact, this is already happening to millions of people who are unable to find meaningful engagements. The new criteria that will determine our self-esteem will be social criteria, since, as we just said, the quality of the connections between us, determines the quality of our lives. Therefore, gradually, we will come to appreciate such values as solidarity, mutual responsibility, and contribution to the community. As we grow into the new paradigm, we will discover that contrary to what we have been taught, man was not created to toil so many hours each day until he or she cannot but want to escape from life. No, we were made to enjoy one another, socialize, challenge one another, and support one another. We were made to help each other be the best individuals we can be and realize our full personal potential, not to be individualistic, isolated, and suspicious of each other. The physical part of our lives is only here to support the spiritual part of our existence. It's the spiritual part that makes us human, but we are so exhausted tending to the physical that we have no energy left in us to nurture our spiritual selves. Is it any wonder that we feel frustrated? Our meaning in life will not be found in work, but in meaningful and enriching connections with others. Only when we grow through our interactions with others, and when we help others grow through their interactions with us, do we feel satisfied that we have contributed something meaningful and lasting. As the tie between work and pay crumbles, we must hurry and introduce these new values. It will spare us much unnecessary agony and lead us quickly and easily into the new era, where satisfactions are spiritual and lasting rather than material and fleeting. The Times of Israel published my new article, "The Pandemic Anti-Semites Call Israel." People react to what hurts them the most, and anti-Semites are no exception. A global response to the coronavirus pandemic, which continues to wreak havoc with more than 50 million cases worldwide, apparently is not the priority for the UN's World Health Organization, WHO. Instead of assessing a global response to the problem, it spent 4 valuable hours of its General Assembly bashing its annoyance, Israel. A similar dose of hatred has been injected by anti-Semites who are accusing Jews behind the companies in charge of the new COVID-19 vaccines of trying to control the world and profit from the pandemic. More than 1 million people have died from COVID-19 around the planet. After months of the pandemic, the virus continues to spread uncontrollably. Lockdowns have been renewed in multiple cities around the world. The global economy crumbles, the education systems operate irregularly, and every realm of people's lives has been impacted. So how is it possible that the main concern of WHO's member nations was condemning the Jewish nation for the health conditions in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, and in the occupied Syrian Golan? If they were to search for real facts concerning those portrayed as underserved in healthcare services, they would discover that in fact the alleged victims receive better medical care in Israel than in any Arab country. So, is there any logic behind singling out Israel over and over again? There is none, because anti-Semitism is an irrational sentiment. Conspiracy theories and blood libels against Jews are not new, they are just reignited. The fact that the scientific community has worked around the clock to develop a new vaccine against the deadly virus has only fueled anti-Semitic allegations. The top medical expert of Moderna, the pharmaceutical company behind just one of the new COVID-19 vaccines, is Dr. Tal Zaks, an Israeli scientist, and Dr. Albert Bourla, a Jew of Greek descent and CEO of Pfizer, which is responsible for another vaccine against the coronavirus. In Greece, a newspaper published a series of articles accusing Dr. Bourla of Nazi-like intentions behind the scientific discovery and of making millions of dollars from the pandemic in coordination with Israel. The world has a disease, anti-Semitism, that particularly resurfaces in times of peril. Why is this so? It is because people feel that Jews hold a pivotal quality to solve the world's troubles. By attacking Jews, they in fact raise the Jewish nation to the pinnacle, holding them both responsible for the problems and, at the same time, acknowledging them as those able and empowered to repair an aching planet. It is precisely the role of the Jewish nation, founded upon the tenet of love your neighbor as yourself, to lead the way to the attainment of unity and toward recovery of the balance in nature that has been lost as a result of our unruly, egoistic and self-centered human relations. Since the times of Abraham, Jews were the first people to identify and understand the laws of nature, the need to live in a society based on mutual responsibility. As nature tightens humanity's connection and more hatred surfaces between people, the time is ripe for learning how to realize our increasing connection positively, how to unite above the growing separation. In the last few months, the need for unity has become pronounced. The coronavirus pandemic illustrates the need for mutual responsibility and consideration to restore and maintain good health, and growing social divisiveness demonstrates the need for unity. If we fail to progress to unity above our own differences as a Jewish nation, we will continue evoking hatred upon ourselves and people will increasingly accuse us of being the root of the world's problems, as we now also see with the coronavirus. The sooner we realize that our unity will have a positive rippling effect the world over, the sooner we will realize that we are treating anti-Semitism at its root. By uniting, we fulfill our role in the world of bringing the forces between humanity and nature back to balance. If we realize our role and initiate unity between us, we will not only see anti-Semitism diminish, but also, conversely, we can expect love and respect for a Jewish people who radiate a positive unifying example to the world. Then there would be no reason for anyone to hate Jews because people would know how to unite, and united people do not hate each other or the ones who show the way to their unity as the only cure to humanity's pains. Michael Leitman, on Quora. Why is unity important to us? Unity is important because nature wants us to unite. By uniting, we enter into balance with nature and awaken the positive force dwelling in nature to surface among us. We then feel positive phenomena fill our lives: happiness, confidence, peace and harmony. On the contrary, by making no motion toward unity, our egos grow unabated, and we let division and hatred separate us, more and more. Accordingly, we experience increasing negative phenomena in our lives, that is, suffering on personal, social, ecological and global scales. Moreover, it is important that our unity is above all divisions, and not merely the unity of one group against another. The latter is simply a group-inflated ego that serves to increase division and hatred in society, and which also leads to no ultimately positive outcome. Therefore, the importance of unity is the importance of our very survival, and whether we live our lives harmoniously or painfully. Establishing the importance of unity in society requires regular education and examples of unity above division. There thus needs to be a shift in the kinds of messaging and examples that we receive through mass media, the television, radio and the internet. If we receive inputs from all these information sources that exemplify the importance and benefits of unity, collaboration and cooperation, people working together to unite above their divisive drives, then we will all start feeling that unity is important, and our attitudes to each other will become calibrated in that direction. Currently, however, such information sources are abundant with divisive messaging, and we thus see myriad negative outcomes in society. The process of prioritizing unity in society has yet to start. Nevertheless, those who wake up to the importance of unity sooner than others would be wise to invest themselves in sending out a red alert to society. Similar to how anti-smoking campaigns grew public awareness of the negative effects of smoking on people's health, likewise unity above division campaigns would aim at raising public awareness of the importance of unity, and the myriad detrimental effects of remaining divided. The key to the transformation from division to unity is to start a process of unity-enriching learning. People will need to reach the realization that nature wants us to unite. We do not demand the impossible from people, nor force anyone to do anything that they do not want to do. We simply organize our socio-cultural influences to bring the need for unity to the center of public discourse, and we will then think about it more and more, and start wanting it to happen. Eventually, unity above division would become as commonplace as smoking-free zones in various public places. People would simply feel that this calibration to act positively to others above their divisive drives is the correct and socially acceptable thing to do. Moreover, it is important to emphasize that at the foundation of this change is nature, that we understand how nature is guiding us to unite, and by doing so, we do not simply wish for a slightly better life through our unity, but we literally save and upgrade everyone's lives on the planet by doing so. Nature abhors anarchy. Question. A person born in our world, according to his nature, always uses others. Of course, upbringing and genes play a role here, but he will at the first opportunity, without hesitating, prefer personal gain over the public good. Does it mean that he does not have any choice? Answer. Of course, all our actions are strictly predetermined. The only choice is to move forward all the time and gradually raise the level of freedom, to what extent I can prefer the collective over the individual. Question. What is the difference between freedom and anarchy? Answer. There is no anarchy in nature. The fact is that people act at the level of our world without knowing the true laws of nature. There is also no anarchy in human behavior. Everything is predetermined, everything is known. The only thing we can do is to attract the surrounding light upon ourselves. However, this also happens under the influence of the upper force, and there is no anarchy here. Anarchy is a specific system. But nature does not tolerate it. Nature is a very serious, strict, and absolute law. From CAB TV's Communication Skills, September 11, 2020. How to create a correct request to the Creator. Question. How can we create a more precise request through the 10? Answer. You can create a more precise request if together you discuss among yourselves what you want to ask for, what your essential request really is, in order to connect as one man in one heart, in one desire, to the one upper source. Then it will be a real request. It cannot be just any request. You can express your positive attitude toward the Creator, your gratefulness that He has brought you together, that He has brought you close to Him, and that He wants to feel your desire to get closer to Him, to respond to Him. He has given you such conditions that now you can learn to speak to Him. You are inside the system, and this system is the Creator, and it is waiting to respond to you. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, November 4, 2018. For illusory purposes. Question. How is the influence of the group in human society different from the herd instincts in animals? Answer. Animals behave as nature dictates them to behave. They do not make mistakes because since they are guided by nature, they act according to a schedule, dictating when to run away, when to approach, to breed at such and such a time of the year, to sleep at such and such a time of the year, etc. But humans are not. We are above nature, above the animate level. And this is our problem. Question. Aren't we humans driven by instincts? Answer. The fact is that we are governed by egoism, and it is so big that we are ready to act even to our own detriment, indulging our ego. A person does a lot of harm to himself only to rise above others. Tell an animal that it must rise above others and suffer because of it, it will not agree. Question. So a person is ready to suffer and even harm himself so that later, in the future, he would enjoy a little? Answer. Yes, for illusory purposes. From CAB TV's Communication Skills, September 25, 2020. New Life 1285. How to prevent bullying rather than cure it.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzavazoz. Hello. And today we would like to talk to Dr. Lightman about situations from life, even a very painful situation from life. We'd like to learn how to deal with it through the very special integral worldview that you're teaching us. Be with us, Nitza, please. So today we'd like to talk about a child who's 10 years old, and he's being ostracized, ignored by his classmates, and this is something that he's experiencing for quite some time now, a few months at least. He doesn't tell anyone about it, his parents don't know about it, and he's dealing with this reality alone, on his own, by himself. The parents, they see that the child's sad and that he has a bad mood. He goes with a bad mood to school. Many times he gets up in the morning. He doesn't want to go to school. Many times he gets up and he says that he has a bellyache. He looks for different reasons, excuses, why not to go to school. But every time that the parents want to encourage him and for him to speak out about what's going on, He doesn't tell them. And one day, while he was taking a shower, suddenly his phone rang. The mom, she took the opportunity, she opened his phone, and suddenly she was exposed to a series of terrible messages about him in the class WhatsApp. There's the class WhatsApp where everyone writes things, and she scrolls down, and you know, things get worse and worse. Suddenly she understands that her child is going through something extremely hard for quite some time now, and everything becomes clear to her. Suddenly she understands what's been going on with him. But exactly then, she really understands that she has no idea what to do with this information that she has now. First of all, the child doesn't know that she knows, because she looked in his phone without his permission. She went through his phone without his permission. But before we turn to the solution of how to deal with this kind of situation, first of all, we'd like to ask you, we chose this because, first of all, it's a very painful story, but very common. Last year, there were a few extreme cases that eventually pushed children to commit suicide. And only in retrospect, it was found out that they were ostracized, that they were excluded socially in class and so on. The parents didn't know about it. So first of all, we'd like to understand the reason. Why do young children, usually it happens in junior high or in grade school, you know, children, they're very young. Suddenly they develop this hate towards some child. They choose a child in elementary school, in high school, and so on. And where does this come from? This is something very natural. Man's inclination is evil from the start, meaning we're born with an evil inclination, with the desire to harm, with the desire to domineer, to rule, to always test myself. Am I in control? Am I safe? Especially at a younger age, we jump on every opportunity if we have the ability to increase our pride. This happens with boys and with girls, and I'd say that it's even stronger in girls. Boys, they have more social stuff to do together, like soccer and so on. But girls, there you have competition, if not from first grade, then from third, fourth grade, and on. And it's natural for men and for women, for all ages. We see it on babies. They still don't know how to walk, but they're really sitting on the floor, not giving anything to anyone. Man's inclination is evil from the start. What do you do about it? I'd narrow our talk down to the simplest and only thing that can help. That is, to prevent rather than cure, meaning to talk about all of these things as if it's not happening among us, through different short movies, situations where we actually do want, that we actually want to scrutinize between us. And if we suppose the entire class, and at these ages of 8, 9, 10, 11, until 12, in these ages, you can organize them. So we do it through theater, through acting. He's small, he's big, he's strong, he's weak, he's smart, he's not, and so on. And everyone has to act out their role, discover it, and then by that, they know how to dress in that, how to come out of themselves and dress in that, each and every one of them. Meaning to reveal what he thinks? No. I'm not demanding anything of the children, but for us to play theater. And then, this way, where they change roles between them, by that we teach them how not to all the time be who they are, but there are different states, that there are other relationships, that there are different forms of behavior, and so on. And this way, they get used to not staying in what society put them in, and so on. Theater should be around a certain topic. Yeah, suppose we're in a group. We're acting out a group. We're acting out a classroom. And there are different children there, or not even a classroom in school, but a scene, some kind of scene. The main thing is to get each child out of his corner and to give him a different role than the one that he's locked in, probably. Everyone has their own corner. Everyone. And then by that role, we draw him out of there, and he has to act out something else. And then he understands that there are other states. He doesn't only have to be that. He acts out his role toward other children, and they, out of their role, act out differently toward him. And this way we start integrating them, mixing them, giving them a feeling that it all comes and goes and that there's nothing real about it. And you can be bad and you can be good and you can be a liar and you can be smart and you can be a fool and you can be everything. Everything exists in every person. And while you build this theater, you have to explain it to them. This is a must, because actually, we're not making human beings out of them. They're not fit. To carry out these correct integral roles in society, and it's a shame. What is the integral principle behind theater? That every person includes everyone, is included of everyone. And therefore, he can be in different roles. He could be a fool, he could be smart, he could be rash, lazy, like this, like that, everyone. Girls, too, in their own style, and boys in their style. So, for example, if I had to organize this kind of classroom now, then I'd give everyone a note with their role. Today, you are the, I don't know, the funny kid, you're the smart girl. No, not today. Now. In half an hour, You change. Yeah, we change roles. We switch roles. Yeah, the opposite. In half an hour, the opposite again. And this way you confuse them. No one will remain inside their shell, inside their fears, locked in. It'll all change. The role that he's acting out in this theater, it's around a certain quality, for example. What will be written in that note? Suppose you're going to act out now. Now you are going to act out the role of, doesn't matter, someone who's stingy around a certain quality. Okay. And in half an hour, the opposite. Not stingy, but smart. Afterwards, you're generous. Afterwards, you're afraid. Then you're rich. Then you're a hero. Different things. And we shake them up inside, and we start showing them how many corners, angles there are here, how many roles, how many states, conditions, relationships change, and they can't stay the way they are. We also let them play a role of a child that bullies other children or ostracizes another child or leads this social exclusion toward other children. We bring that in too. Yes, but not immediately. First of all, do what I say. Prepare them in these different states and then bring in your role, your scenes. Okay. Naturally, there are children that are stronger, more domineering, and there are children that aren't. Okay. So let those more internalized children, introverted children, give them the role of some lifeguard, some hero, something. This role-playing, will it change the innate qualities of a child? This is something that we can never do. But we teach them how to compensate. What do you mean? That this is how everyone compensates, completes themselves to an average person. Will these games neutralize? You said that a person is evil from the start, that he's... No, the evil inclination takes on 1,000 different forms. But if you already want to work against the evil inclination, Mister, then that's... I want to prevent... I want to prevent bullying. I want to prevent children being ignored and socially excluded. Will it prevent this? Yes. Okay, you said that it's better to prevent than cure. I understand how to do it now. Now, suppose I'm the mother. I found out my child didn't tell me that for the past few months they're really giving him a hard time at school. I'm torn on the inside. This the situation. This my child. These are his classmates, and he is in a catastrophical situation. I'm the only one who discovered it. He doesn't even know that I know. What do I start doing? There are a few factors here. There's my son. There are the children in class that ostracize him. There's the teacher, the classroom teacher. They're the parents of the bullies. Now, how, from the integral perspective, should a mother start behaving? What is the first step to do? I'm perplexed. First of all, the best thing would be to invite the entire class, or at least his friends, the so-called friends. Invite them home for a birthday or for something. and give them, throw them a party. Usually they don't come. That's one of the things. When a child is ostracized, he can throw a birthday party and no one will come. Okay? Only because of that you can commit suicide. Imagine the situation. You threw a birthday party and no one came. No one. You can go directly to the cemetery. You don't exist. You were erased from the world. So only theater then. Only theater and the classroom that by acting out these roles that you give them, these different characters, by these necessary roles, you get them out of what they're living out for them to live out other different relationships. Should the mother tell the child that she knows? No. The mother has to talk to the teacher and advise the teacher to do that. Okay, the natural inclination of a mother or any parent who finds out about such a thing is first of all to protect this child and first of all go and beat everything up, everyone up. The bullies, the teachers. No, won't help. That's the natural inclination. Now, actually, what you're saying is that the right thing to do is not to tell the child, but first of all, to approach the teacher and to tell them about this. And suppose the teacher didn't study integral education. She's not aware of this method. So your advice is to realize this kind of theater. Maybe in school there's also a psychologist. I don't exactly know. Yeah, there is one in every school. So go to her and talk to her. Maybe not directly to the teacher, because, you know, you don't come to teach the teacher what to do, so it won't look that way. Are there other ways to deal with this situation? For example, to influence children? I don't know. I never thought about it, but it seems to me that that's the best thing to do. I want to tell you a bit, share with you, because on the internet we found many things that children that were ostracized for a long period of time, what do they say about themselves? Why didn't they tell about it? Why are they so perplexed that they didn't even tell their parents? So these are a few things that they said. First of all, they said, I really don't know, why was I ostracized? Why was I bullied? I didn't do anything to anyone. When they were asked, why didn't you tell your parents? Then it perplexes me. They'll ask me why. I don't know what to say. And then my parents will think that, you know, I'm a poor guy, and that's even worse. And when they were asked, who are you angry at? He said, my friends that turned their back on me so easily. And many times in a state of, in this kind of state, you know, they're children that aren't really deep into the evil stuff, but they ignore what's going on in order not to get in trouble with the strong kids, then they simply ignore it, kind of. And he describes how afraid and alone he felt and that no one loves him. So this is actually what the child felt. So I'm asking, suppose a parent that pays attention sees that his child has a bad mood. How can he encourage him to tell, share what's going on? Is it the right thing to do? No, that's not the right thing to do, and it's not the nature of a child to do. Why? You can ask whatever, you can say what you want, you can ask whatever you want, but a child won't talk about that to his parents. He suffers on the inside, and that's it. Yeah, he's about to explode. Doesn't matter. The parents aren't the right person to talk to. Okay, so the first principle is there's no point in encouraging the child to talk. Nah, he'll tell you everything's fine. What do you want? This is exactly what they say. Now, on part of the children, they say, the children from his classroom. They say, we don't like him. We don't have to be his friends. Or it's just a game. We're having fun. He's a bit weird. He's in our way. He's in your face. When he comes, he gives everyone a bad mood. Different things like that. We don't like seeing him, in short. We don't like the way he is. He ruins whatever it is that's going on. So it's better for him to disappear altogether, move to another school, and be erased from the world. For us, it would be the best thing. Now, let's try and talk about those children in terms of what they feel. They feel that he is in their face. We don't want him there. What kind of role acting can you advise us to do here for this painful situation? To put them into a theater, and on that theater, everyone will have to talk and relate to each other, interact with one another. But when this is already the atmosphere in the classroom, it's already happening. This is the situation. Lead me into this scene. What is the scene? Suppose they are on some field trip and they have to save some friend from a pit. And then all of them, they discuss how to do it, in what way. And each and every one of them tries to bring and do something, and by that, you put him into the group that are engaged in saving that child, where everyone feels themselves as a part of one, and this way he gradually breaks down the walls between him and the others. What role in this scene would you give the leading bully, boy or girl, whoever that is, that are doing the serious bullying, that are excluding that child? That's something that you have to scrutinize precisely. Of course, it's good for them to let them be a leader, but on condition that that leader, on condition that that leader, in his or her appearance, they have to use the suppressed child, use him and pull him to them as a partner, and so on. You have to see, these are things that are very complex. You can do many things here. What is the leading principle here? The leading principle is that in a theater you build a new life where this child has a good role. Okay, this is great. Now I have a question. Suppose we do that in a class. We have an hour or two. How long are we going to be in the theater? We'll be here for some time. We finished theater. Now the child, each of them is going back home. No. Things already changed now. It already changed. It affects everyone, influences everyone. What does it build in them, actually? A new life. Kids live according to that. According to what? According to the scenes that they see in life. Is it true only for children, by the way? Especially for children. Now I want to talk about the teacher. You're a teacher in this classroom. This happened in your classroom. You're actually a failure. If this is happening in your classroom, no, it's not a failure because no one deals with it. What do you want? That's how kids are. So what are you supposed to tell yourself in order to start leading a positive change? What will you tell yourself? Myself? You're the teacher in that classroom. Suddenly, that this is how they're brought up at home, and this is their character, and a child sees an example from his father, who's probably domineering at home, or the mother, that this is how she behaves, that also this is why the daughter comes this way, that she's, you know, the opposite of being modest. She wants to be queen of the class or whatever. Should you change your attitude toward the leaders of this boycott, of this social exclusion? As a teacher? I don't think so. Usually it doesn't affect the relationship between the students. Should you specially give a special treatment to that child that's being ostracized? No, won't help him in life. We have to change the relationship. In short, we have to take care of the children. We have to make human beings out of them, normal human beings, normative human beings. That include all the forms that need the correct kind of behavior. Unfortunately, our time's almost up. I'd like to come out of this, of the classroom, of the social exclusion and so on. And from a bird's eye view, what's the most important integral rule that we have learned here that can, in every relationship, we have to act out good, kind, broad-hearted people that are willing to help each other and so on? Why? Why? Because life is easier that way. You saw it in class, right? So what are you asking me about? Can a game really allow us to behave in different ways? Give us different... Of course. Because we are animals. We get used to these things. What do you mean that we're animals? We're animals, meaning that we get used to different states, and what we act out is a matter of education. What is education? Education is that I am taught for a lengthy period of time and many times that you have to say thank you, you have to say excuse me, it's forbidden for you to pick your nose, and things like that. And gradually we learn. We learn. So can I teach you to be a person that doesn't want to harm others? This is what you're telling me. Not only that I don't want to harm, I understand that how to be nice near others, next to others, how to evoke a good attitude in them, and not only toward myself, toward life, toward everyone. This is called an educated person, that he makes sure that the people around him are in uplifted spirits, are in a good mood for them to function properly. This is the integral picture. Yeah? Dr. Leitman, thank you very much. Unfortunately, our time's up. Nitsa, thank you. And thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best. Bye-bye.